Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
You're listening to the Dublin Story Slam podcast. The Dublin Story Slam is an open mic storytelling night that takes place every month in the Sugar Club in Dublin, and we invite members of the audience to pop their names into a hat, and if they get picked, they get up on stage and share a true story inspired by a different theme each month. Now, these are short stories, usually about 4 to 7 minutes, and what you're going to hear here on the Dublin Story Slam podcast is a carefully curated selection of some of the finest stories that we've been gathering for the last year. And joining me as a co-curator for this next 35 odd minutes or so, it's our regular Story Slam host, Mr. Colm O'Regan.
I think that's the first time I've been referred to as a curator. I'm proud of that title. I'll put it with influencer if I ever get called one of those. And I'm always looking forward to hearing these stories again.
How do we curate these stories? I mean, when you're listening back to the stories, what are you looking for to decide whether or not we should share it with the podcast?
I think it's those stories where there's a bit of tension. There is a sense that they're painting a picture of a time and a place, and also just that ripple in the audience as well too. We want to hear the story. We also want to get a sense of the experience that it was, what it was like to be there. It's called a podcast, but we want it to be a live night in your ears.
Exactly. So you're almost sitting there in the front row, taking a quick intake of breath as you react to what's been said on stage. And today's show, the theme we were looking at is pivot, which is a slightly ambiguous kind of term, but when you hear the stories, they all kind of, inverted commas, pivot around a certain key event. It's where something happens in the story that just suddenly changes both the tone of the story. It can change the experience for the listener, but also maybe just the life of the storyteller themselves. So the first story that we are going to play for you is from Neil Horgan, and he is a really powerful storyteller. But how would you describe Neil?
Well, he's compelling, and he sets the scene from the first word. He starts, there's drama in there, there's big gestures, there's a powerful voice, and then he can drop to a whisper. But the topics then are very human and very gritty, very revealing. He gives so much of himself on stage. He lays himself very bare, but I don't think we feel uncomfortable at how bare he lays himself, because we feel he's in control. And there has been some sort of redemption along the way.
So this first story, it does come with a little bit of a rating on it. It does feature scenes of a slightly graphic nature and definitely of an adult nature. So if that's not your thing, then maybe sit this one out. But this
Horgan,
is Neil Horgan.
Neil Horgan. Oh, there's Neil, the man Neil. I was 14 years of age, in Paris, on a school trip. It was the last day, and I had 3 hours free. No teachers, no parents. So naturally, I headed for the red light district. Pigalle, the legendary Pigalle. I couldn't believe all the XXX movie theatres everywhere. And I certainly couldn't believe when I threw up a 10-franc note to a kiosk that I was handed a ticket. I walked into my first porno cinema. The afternoon show, it was empty. I sat in row 3, just like I'm sitting in tonight. And there in front of me was a giant screen with a man and woman smoking French cigarettes. I looked around. I was alone. The man started to take off his clothes. All his clothes. It was 3 times bigger than mine. My low self-esteem started in that theatre. She took off her clothes. All her clothes. My Levi Strauss tightened. And I wanted to do what all teenage boys do at any chance. I unzipped. I took my life in my hand. It didn't last long. Zipped up and got up, relieved to leave. Bravo! I heard. I looked around, there was no one in the theatre. But the balcony was full. I ran and ran and ran. Beetroot. But not beetroot enough that I didn't buy a whole load of hardcore porn mags at the airport that night and rented them out in fourth year for £1 a night and became very popular in school. Porn had descended on my life. In your 30s, relationships are important. And I had an 8-year relationship that started when I was 35. And one day, my partner turned to me and said, "We haven't had sex for years." I didn't want to hear the truth. "You're more interested in that computer." She left. But before she left, she said, "You left years ago." And she was right. 3 lonely years later, I met Fiona, who's here tonight. And 1 year into our relationship, we were fighting about porn. I found her crying one day. I asked her what was wrong. She said, "I feel rejected. Alone. It hurts so much to hurt someone so beautiful and gentle as her." I got help. I went to a counselor and I talked. And it was really embarrassing. Really. But last month, I celebrated 4 years porn free. And myself and Fiona are just back from a holiday of a lifetime to the Galapagos Islands. And I asked her, "Do you still feel rejected and alone on the flight home?" She said, "No. I feel connected and loved." I had a chest burst of happiness across the Atlantic. No one had ever said that to me before. I asked her permission to tell the story tonight, and she said yes. I bet we're not the only ones. So, I didn't just escape from a French cinema in 1981. I escaped from porn.
That was Neil Horgan there. What was amazing about that story was the visible relief on Neil's face when he, you know, finished the last line of his story. It kind of felt like, you know, he could breathe again almost.
It was the first time I'd ever been at a live event where somebody talks about that kind of addiction. I have a feeling we'll hear more about it. The evolution of talking about addictions of a sexual nature. We're still effectively 12-year-old boys in our attitude to it, you know, as a society. Like if somebody says I'm a sex addict, people go, oh, sure, I wish I was. You know, that kind of, we haven't come to terms with it. Now, if he had told that story about it being related to drink or drugs, like the audience watching them, they were, you could see them working overtime in pivoting themselves and adjusting their frames of reference to how to deal with somebody who talks about an addiction. You know, but it's another addiction.
Well, yeah, but even, you know, how it affects your relationship.
Yeah.
I mean, that's even it's such a sensitive topic because yeah. It's kind of just happening in front of people. And,
yeah.
You know, a lot of people aren't recognizing, you know, what the kind of the cost that can kind of come with.
That's right.
You know, such an addiction. So our next story is from Joe Brennan. And the amazing thing about Joe is not only the way he tells this story, but the fact that he traveled all the way up from Kerry to tell it. I mean, we're used to having people maybe, you know, get the bus in from the outskirts of town, but never travel nearly 3.5, maybe 4 hours to be with us on the night. So a huge thanks to Joe. This story is, in a way, it's completely opposite to Neil's because it's all about one particular scene that plays out over the story. And it goes along at a very slow and very tense pace. But again, I hadn't heard this story been told before. Without further ado, this is Joe Brennan.
A few days after the coup, the army lifted the curfew, the markets and souks reopened, and the people started to drift back to work. And life returned to something like normal. But there were rumours. There were rumours of disappearances. There were rumours that the war in the South was going to end. There was rumours the war was going to get worse. There were stories of new government, new alliances. But for the ordinary people, life continued. There were shortages in the marketplace. Petrol was rationed. Cigarettes were hard to find. And day-to-day life just went on. It was 1989. I was working as a teacher in Sudan, one of these volunteer programs. And I'd gone there to escape. I was escaping mid-80s Ireland, a grey monochrome Roscommon. I was escaping London, dirty, dangerous construction work. I was on a job one time, there was 5 guys digging down a hole. All of us had degrees. Young English kid with, you know, the summer job told us if we went back to school and got an education, we'd better get better jobs. The guy doing the Masters in Philosophy from Trinity had to be restrained. So I was escaping. I was escaping that time in life when you're officially an adult, but you don't really know. I was escaping a relationship with a lovely girl, but wrong time, wrong place. So I was been in Sudan a few years. And, you know, it was a crazy place, but I liked it. And some people there, some of my friends were really good. Some were great teachers. I wasn't. Some were great linguists. They learned Arabic fluently, and I didn't. But I was just good at being there. It made sense to me. But then the coup, and things were different. And one day I left my office and I was walking home and I walked down through the souk, through the market, and down that long road where I was in the old city in Omdurman, and the road comes across the Nile Bridge out to the western suburbs. And there was a junction there. Sometimes you could get taxis and buses, and those guys selling things, and nice market. But because of the shortages, it was bedlam. A big bus came in. One of those old, battered, you know, the yellow, long-nosed school buses from America. They used them there. No windows. 50 seats, 110 people, some of them hanging on. A mini riot, the ones getting off were being pushed by the ones getting on. Failed to get that. And I started walking. And there's a lot of people walking. And it's hot. It's like 35, 36 degrees. And I'm walking up that long road. And, you know, I'm learning now in my mid-years about white privilege. I didn't think about it back then, but, you know, we stood out. They called us Khawajas, but they were nice to us, the Sudanese. And the guy stopped. He was driving a Range Rover, posh car. And I got in. He was maybe 30, clean, new jeans, plaid shirt, sandals, light-skinned, maybe Western tribe, maybe Southern, not sure. And the car was pretty new, but radio was gone. There was a lot of wires hanging in front of the dash. He gave me a cigarette from a 20-pack of Benson in a country where you couldn't buy single cigarettes sometimes. What country? Irlanda. Hollandia? Irlanda. Dublin. Ah, Poppy Sands. Sometimes it was Bob Geldof, but you know. That's okay. And we're driving along, and the traffic starts to build up. And sometimes the army would throw, they called it a teftish. And sometimes it was an accident. So he pulled off the road and cursed a bit. And we made our way through the back streets. And at that point, one of these little back streets, there was a bus in the way. It was stalled, we stalled. And a pickup truck came up behind us and was shouting. And the driver shouted back. And there was more shouting. And I looked, and a man had got out of the pickup truck, just sort of one foot in, one out. He's a military officer. Khaki shirt, Sam Brown belt. In the back of the truck was four soldiers, Southern guys, scar faces, impassive, rifles. And the Sudanese had that thing. It was a chaotic country, but people called each other Yaki, brother. So there was always, you know, there wasn't a deference to authority. And they'd get that thing out of the road. What am I going to do, man? There's a bus up here. I can't move it. It's my fault. You're blocking a military vehicle. Move. I said, I can't. And then the soldier said, get in the truck. And my driver went quiet. And sometimes with the Arabic guys, in Arabic, they had an expression, malesh. It means like, it's okay. Like dommage in France. Never mind. Sometimes it means I'm sorry. And it was a way of de-escalating. And the driver said, malesh. And the officer reached into his pickup truck and took out a short submachine gun and said, get in the truck. And the fight went out of the driver and he put his head down. He just stepped out of the Range Rover there in the road. He went round and he climbed into the back of the pickup truck. And I opened the door of my car, of my side door, and I slid out. And I took my little backpack and I very quietly moved forward. I took the first left and I hastened my steps and I took the second left. And it was a little bit like there was a camera above my head watching my Clark's desert boots moving through the white sand. And two streets away, I went into a little cafe and I ordered a glass of mint tea and a single cigarette. Smoked the cigarette, sipped the tea, waited for my hands to stop shaking, and then I walked away. Thank you.
Joe Brennan, ladies and gentlemen. Wow.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
That was Joe Brennan there sharing his story. And huge thanks to Joe for travelling all the way from Kerry to be with us on that night. And we hope to hear more stories from him. Did you feel yourself unclenched?
Yeah.
after all that tension?
I'm even tense listening to it again now. And something about the way Joe told it, I think maybe he was just a little bit nervous about telling it on stage, but the slight nerves of telling the story on stage perfectly matched the slight quiver you'd have in your in telling that story in the cafe,
in
afterwards with the single cigarette and the cup of mint tea. That's where I felt like I was hearing the story for the first while.
You kind of got that sense of regret in the story, you know.
Is it survivor's guilt?
Or guilt? Maybe, yeah.
Does he wonder what happened to that man who had stopped to give him a lift? I would love to be the type of person who would walk like that. I'm trying to put myself in that scenario. Would I have the cojones to open the door and walk and keep walking? Because walking is an act of guilt. Yeah. But there's so much John le Carré about that scene, you know? It's really evocative.
Okay, let's go to our last story. And our last story becomes also on a pivot of our own, Colm. And that is the Dublin Story Slam. We run this night every month. And at the end of the year, usually around about November, we have what's called the Grand Slam. And the Grand Slam is the climax of the year. It's where we take eight, sometimes, well, last year was 10, but this year's is going to be 8 storytellers. And we bring them to a very special venue, a slightly bigger venue as well. And they create 8 brand new stories inspired by a brand new theme. And it's called the Dublin Story Grand Slam. We are delighted to announce that we will be returning to the Abbey Theatre, of all places. This is our national theatre here in Ireland, and the stages just don't get any bigger than this. We will be returning to the Abbey with a brand new Grand Slam on November 18th. That's a Sunday for those of you looking at your calendars. Tickets will be going on sale for that one probably start of October. And the best way to find out when and where you can get your hands on those tickets is to join the mailing list. I'm always harping on about the mailing list, feeling like a bit of a school teacher. But join the mailing list, info@thedublinstoryslam.com, or just visit thedublinstoryslam.com website and you can click on the button that just says sign me up to the mailing list. And then we'll let you know when those tickets go on sale. But they will be going on sale in the start of October. And we hope that they will sell out fast. But you never know.
Listen. It sells out every year, so why don't you just get the tickets early and we can clear it all up and get on with our lives.
And focus on the
important
task.
It will sell out, so let's not have any nonsense about it, and we can go on and decorate the place.
Well, that's
maybe
it.
Put up tinsel or something.
There's a lot of balloons that have to be blown up, and you know, paper chains have to be put up around the place. But to play you out today, we're going to play you the Grand Slam winning story from 2017, and that is from a regular story slammer. Her name is Daisy McCarthy. Daisy told this story on the night with the kind of energy that you would normally see, like in a mini tornado. She just suddenly swept up onto the stage, swept the audience up, you know, in the midst of this crazy, beautiful journey that was her life, I suppose, at that point. And I think it just has such a giddiness to it that even, I don't know how many times I've heard this now, but I still really, really enjoy it as much today as I heard it all those months ago.
Yeah, she's just a great performer, such a warm performer as well too.
Okay, so here is Daisy McCarthy with that winning Grand Slam story.
Hi, this is a story about how I found myself in the Irish Sea this March after losing my mind. I have a frazzled mind, but it's 2017, we all do. I've kind of got the kind of frazzled mind that I have such constant dialogue going on in my head that I don't even notice if I'm alone. You know, what's in the fridge? Did I do that at work? When will I text that person back? Etc., etc. Did I lock the car? And in addition, I really love making stuff. Kind of pottery, sewing videos, whatnot. And as soon as something comes into my head to make, my brain just does not give me rest until it's made. A year ago, I came back to Ireland for a calmer existence. And at this time, via an existential crisis out with the scope of this tale, I started making sequin capes. First for friends, and then for people who I wanted to be my friends, and then, I mean, to offset the cost of the sequins, I proffered my services online, and you'd be surprised, people actually want to purchase sequin capes off strangers on the internet, and people got it from London and Australia, and the other thing you'd be surprised about is the urgent nature of their need. And so there was a woman who absolutely had to have a green sequin cape for her 5-year-old for a Disney cruise later that week in Florida. So I did that. There was a man in Australia who was going to a festival and absolutely needed a kind of a silver sequin cloak to match his shiny disco ball. The following week, did that. My mother actually said that the type of costume I had made her despair for humanity. And so it was really exciting. This wasn't my full-time job. This is just something I did on the time, but it was in my full-time brain all the time. And it was like, I really loved all of it. But I love when people got in touch and they're like, can you make this? I said, yes. And then I worked out how I'd make it, just wing it. And I love sourcing the material everywhere from Los Angeles to the actual North Side. And then made the thing and took the pictures, did all the Instagrammy things, and then I just twirled around my flat before packing it up and bringing it to the GPO, you know, with all its bullet holes from the 1916 Rising, where the postmen would give me free envelopes and call me young lady. It was great. And then I... Well, no, it was the problem, I guess, if there was a problem, is that there was only 24 hours in the day. I was working full time. I was doing a master's in education. Sure, why not? And I was doing this. So what transpired is that I was essentially running a one-woman sequined sweatshop. I was working and coming back and spending all hours essentially exploiting myself and the sewing machine until midnight, all the while pretending to concerned friends and family that I was living the life of a dazzling young professional in the city, all, you know, drinks and brunch. And it was, I mean, obviously it was going to spiral out of control, and so it did. It was after Christmas slump last year, and I really had absolutely nothing under control, life, work, anything. What I did then was, I lost my mind. I got some psoriasis. That's what happens. It's my body's like, you've lost your mind. That's what's happening here. And then I got the flu, and then the flu went into my mind. It was all negative and being like, what the absolute F are you doing? This is all your fault. What do you think you're doing? If you hadn't made this, all these choices in your life, you wouldn't be so unhappy right now. And something had to give. And obviously, what with everything else, it was the sequins had to give. So I told my friends and family that I was going to stop doing it. I told them I didn't actually stop doing it. I turned it into a kind of an undercover job. As addictions go, it's on the tamer side of things, but it still has the same patterns of denial and lying. How can you say, oh no, I won't make you a unicorn sequin cape? Or no, sorry, you're getting married, I can't make you and your five flower girls matching sequin. No, you can't do that. So I didn't. I just kept on going like a dervish. And the psoriasis spread all out over my body. And I went to a dermatologist who recommended light therapy. I took literally and figuratively, but nothing obviously worked. And then I was in a heap in my parents' house. Parenting never ends. And saying, listen, you know, I can't do Ireland. What in the name of God is this? There's no place for a leper like me in this town. I need to leave. And what's more, I'll never find happiness again. And my father was, I think he was scraping the bottom of the barrel. He didn't want another daughter to leave. So he said, no, you haven't tried everything. You haven't gone into the sea. The sea will do it. You'll be grand. Go into the sea there. And so you're surrounded by it in Dublin. So I went up, and on a Wednesday in March, I went to the 40 foot, and I was surprised. I wasn't the only one there. I was the youngest by circa 50 years. And they were doing it. They were alive. So I got into the swimsuit and got into the sea. And it was cold. It was the kind of cold, I suppose, that can be described as an intense pain, where you lose like functions like being able to breathe. And I thought, feck this, I'm getting out. And I went to get out, but there was a long, slow line of senior citizens on the paths, the steps. There was no way out, so I just had to breaststroke my way on. And so I contemplated the medical emergencies like death that I was going to undertake. And then this two incredible things happened. One was that once my extremities went numb, I stopped feeling the cold, and on the rest of my body it was this amazing kind of warm, glowy feeling, which is lovely. And then an even more odd thing happened. I just noticed it was really quiet. Not like around with the oldies. It was quiet in my brain. Because swimming, I noticed all that frazzled thought kind of simmered away down into nothing. And I was just there bobbing in Dublin Bay with just one thought left. And that was that everything was going to be okay.
Yeah.
So that was Daisy McCarthy there with the winning Grand Slam story from 2017. The Dublin Story Grand Slam will be taking place on November 18th on Sunday. That is November 18th in the Abbey Theatre. Tickets for that one will be going on sale at the start of October. And if you want to be the first to find out when and where they go on sale, just join the mailing list over at thedublinstoryslam.com. And we're delighted to also announce that we are going to be taking part in the Dublin Podcast Festival, which takes place in loads of venues all around town. And there are some amazing podcasts out there. Adam Buxton is going to be in Vicar Street, The Guilty Feminist with Alison Spittle, and then some really, really cool podcasts from Head Stuff, like Juvenalia, those conspiracy guys, and Mother Folklore. Folklore.
Yeah.
We'll be, as usual, in our usual slot in the Sugar Club on October 16th. The theme for this month is fear. So if you have any particular stories that may or may not have a supernatural flair to them, then we would love to hear them. But at the same time, if you're human and you've been afraid at any time in your life, we would also love to hear from you. So that is Stories Inspired by Fear on October 16th. Head over to the DublinStorySlam.com website, sign up to the mailing list to find out when those tickets for the Grand Slam go on sale. And we will talk to you next month with a particularly spooky and ghost-filled podcast episode.
We'll probably talk a little huskier as well too, just to increase the intimacy and increase the fear.
Yeah, so make sure to join us for that. Okay, thanks a million for listening. We'll talk to you next month.
Yes, I echo those sentiments. Goodbye.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com. A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare tri-term medical plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.